stickers on Twitter. Sundar Pichai gets hacked. A cute robot that probably won't kill you. Georgia Dow from iMore and Ashley Escada from CNET are here to talk VR and so much more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1543, recorded Monday, June 27th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And by Zerto, virtual replication and disaster recovery technology that gives you the confidence to keep your business moving no matter what comes your way. Zerto empowers you to protect and recover your IT assets, move to the cloud, and know you're ready for anything. Get a free readiness assessment for your data center at ConfidenceCIO.com. And by Atlassian, unleash your team's potential with collaborative software tools like HipChat and Jira, which will enable you to work better and communicate better together. Visit Atlassian.com to learn more. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we tell you everything you need to know about the digital world today. I'm Megan Maroney. Jason Howell is out, but I am joined by Georgia Dow, one of the hosts of the iMore show. Georgia's a writer, a speaker, a psychotherapist, a very frequent guest on our show and other Twitch shows. Welcome, Georgia.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you. So
me
now
too.
you guys, you're still on the iMore show, but now there's sort of two iMore shows. You split off. What are the differences between the two?
So there's Apple Talk, which is a talk which kind of analyzes and goes in depth on specific issues. And then we have the iMore show, which is kind of more pop, things that are current, things that are fun. And we go into, it's a more enjoyable, fluffy show. So if you're looking for a little bit of all of the Apple news, then the iMore show. And if you're looking at in-depth coverage, deal with the Apple Talk show.
Well, I like to listen to both, but I was very excited to hear you guys talking about it because I know you said that there was a lot of things that you wanted to try. And I thought that some of those things might involve glitter and fuzzy iPhone cases, and I was very interested in that. Is that true, or is that too much to expect from?
That is exactly what we're going to be doing. I still have my fuzzy case that we made together.
Oh, I do.
And glitter and all of those things. So when we go to video, we will be testing out and putting out different things that the people in the community are also going to be going with us. So we'll have little challenges.
I can't wait. And we're going to talk about one of your life hacks later in the show, too. I'm very excited about that, but we should get started. I know how much you like stickers and Twitter, so today's top story combines them both. Soon you'll be able to add stickers to your photos on Twitter, just like you can on Snapchat. But in the stickers arms race, Twitter will go one better. Stickers will work like hashtags, so when you click on a sticker, you can see all the other people who tweeted photos with that same sticker. How excited about this are you, Georgia?
I love the idea about Twitter and stickers. I will use them and probably use them a little bit too much. I am sorry if you follow me on Twitter. That's what you're going to expect because I love stickers and Bitmoji. It just makes tweeting fun for me. I don't know about the searching. I've never really, I think that Twitter's asking the question that no one's ever asked, which is, you know, how many people have used the left magnifying glass and what did they use them for? I guess maybe that would be to increase your Twitter lexicon. If you do not know how to use an emoji, you can, figure out how to use this sticker better. I'm not so sure as to if I will ever use that feature, but I don't know.
Well, you know, last week we reported that Twitter was going to start using emoji to target you with ads. So I wonder if these two things are connected or if they're trying to figure out if they're connected. I'm assuming this is just fun, but there is a question, like, is there something in common with all the people who like to use the dancing woman emoji? And you know, could we then sell them things based on their use of this emoji? So I'm wondering if those two things are connected. I don't know.
It kind of makes me question Twitter's thoughts on how they're going to monetize Twitter, because I don't think there's really anything related to the emoji that I use besides what I am speaking about at the time. And I use strange emoji and put them together in ways that are different. So, you know, if I use, you know, a goat emoji, it's probably not because I want you to, you know, sell me goat products. If I have a dragon emoji, you know, maybe I do like, you know, dragons, but it's going to be hard to sell me dragon products. So I'm not really sure how they're going to monetize that, but it'll be interesting to see.
Well, you know, when you were on Twit last, you were talking to Leo about the new messages that were the new fancy things and messages that were announced at WWDC. And he has said this to you, and he said this to me too, that he thinks things like, you know, stickers and Bitmoji are really popular with moms. And I can't quite, I think based on my empirical evidence, it is true that I do sort of feel like it, I do use Bitmoji mostly with other moms. What do you think that is all about?
Well, I think that it makes it fun in order to message. Like for me, the reason that I use it is because I get joy every time I receive a Bitmoji, or if I have a whole bunch of pics. Like I think that it's kind of fun to be able to deal with that. It's quick, it's easy, and it, you know, makes us kind of feel like we're hip at the same time while we're using them. But I don't know if it's mostly a mom thing. I think that stickers and other things, it's more of, you know, a younger generation thing. And so I think that moms and younger generation are people that like to use this. But all of my friends use it as well. Again, we're kind of in the techosphere, so maybe that's one of the defining factors as well. But I'm going to be using all of the things, sparkles, sprinkles, booms, balloons. Everyone's going to be inundated with things for a little while.
I'm ready. So, of course, you said, you know, that you don't know if this was a good way for Twitter to monetize, you know, to become a more viable company. There was also a lot of complaints immediately, as there always are, like, great, thanks for the stickers, fix the harassment problem. You know, I don't know. Do you agree with that? That do you think they've gone forward at all in helping stem the tide of harassment?
I think that they're a little bit more quick to act, which is a good thing. I don't think that they've really dealt with the problem fully, because people can just make a new account and then continue the harassment again. And so I think that they need to step up their game. But I do know that there's a faster reaction time in comparison to that. So I hope that they take this seriously, because that's what's going to stop people from feeling comfortable on their platform. And if your friends are not on Twitter, then neither will you be. And so I think it's really important for them to create a safe environment for people to be able to fully express themselves and not worry that they're going to have a barrage of hate or rants that are going to come at them.
Well, we agree that stickers are useful. Some people find them useless. And here's some more tech stuff that some people find completely useless. The Wall Street Journal reports that Amazon plans to create more of those dash buttons that you press to get stuff instantly delivered to your door, specific stuff for each button. They'll now be available to you with dozens of additional products. But the internet is asking, who is buying these and why? Now, one answer might be that these buttons are essentially free. The discounts you get on the products pay for the buttons themselves. I'm not sure exactly how much they cost. They're not free for the companies, though. So that's another question. What are they getting out of this? Have you used any of these dash buttons? I have not.
No, I don't think that I would use one of the dash. Like, there was something that I bought a lot of and I didn't want to go onto the internet to click a button on the internet. I think that someone brought up a really good point with the dash buttons, which is if the price increases, you might get a message, but you don't really know if the price is increased on the product. And so if you want speed and convenience over making sure of a price check to it, then maybe these dash buttons would be useful. If you need something and you need it like really quickly, you would go to the store. If you need it and you don't want to have to wait a long time, you know, then maybe you would take the convenience of just pressing a button instead of going online and buying it or going to the store to buy it. But I think that it doesn't really fit a strong niche, because if you want it now, I'm buying it. And if I want it, if I don't matter if it's a week or two, it would be easier for me to go online. But I guess it's just for the effortlessness of being able to press one button and suddenly have things come to your door with that. But I don't think that there's a lot of people that have bought them. I don't know anyone personally that has one for anything, except for, I think that Leo has one. Did Leo have one?
I don't know if he has everything, so probably, yes.
Right,
but
right,
I don't
right.
know if he uses right. it on a regular basis. But I'll have to ask him that. Yeah, I mean, you bring up an excellent point, which is the same. I know you don't have an Amazon Echo, and I'm sorry for that because they're not available in Canada. But that's the same reason that I don't buy things using the Echo, because I can't check the price necessarily. I mean, it probably could. It probably does say what the price, but I can't compare the price, which is what I want to do. It's much easier to open up a browser, open up my app on my phone to compare the prices. So, you know, and if you really want things to come effortlessly, you would use Subscribe and Save and just have it, you know, have your toilet paper or your Tide or your coffee come at a regular interval, which is super easy and has been around for almost a decade now, I think.
Yeah, plus they're pretty large. And, you know, if you use this for many things, you're going to have many different buttons that are going to create clutter around the room. And I know that they say that you should put, you know, your bottle for, you know, laundry detergent in your room where you use laundry detergent. But again, this is taking up a whole bunch of space. They're not the most beautiful of things that you're having lying around. My luck, I would lose one when I need it. And I'm spending more time searching for my button than just going online to get it. And so I think that that's another point to it. If they were a little bit more attractive looking, maybe a little bit smaller, that would be helpful to it, but not so small that I would lose it.
Yeah, I think one of the questions the Wall Street Journal is also asking is, what's in it for the companies? These are all unnamed sources. The story is based on unnamed sources, but they say that companies pay Amazon $15 for each button sold and 15% of each Dash product that's sold. That's in addition to the normal commissions that Amazon takes. And they said that Procter & Gamble, Kimberly-Clark, and Pepsi were early adopters in the program, and they allegedly paid $200,000 to be one of the first products with Dash buttons. So I guess they are really counting on this button really changing the way people shop and thinking, well, I have the button. I'll never choose a different laundry detergent besides Tide because I have the button.
Right, right, exactly. But they're still going to have to go to the store to buy food and other products, and so there'll be laundry detergent there. And so I think that the use case for this is kind of, it misses on both scopes, because I'm still going to the store. If I didn't have to go to the store at all and everything was delivered to me, that would be a different story. I wouldn't have to leave the house. But since I'm already in the store, going to the aisle where there's laundry detergent and putting it into my basket is pretty easy already. Versus waiting for that. And when I need laundry detergent, I need it now. So I'm just sending my poor hubby to go to the store to get it for me.
I guess maybe for people who it's not easy to go to the store, it would be good. And maybe for people, the same people who are going to want drones delivering their Tide, maybe it will be more instantaneous. And it really will be, here's the push the button, look out the window, there's the drone that just brought my Tide. Maybe
that's actually, that might make me get a button just to watch a drone come and deliver something to me. Then I'll probably use it once. And then after it'll be lackluster the second and third time the drone shows up. It's like, oh yeah, the drone again. I just want to see all the neighbors looking at my house as the drone comes by to bring me my stuff.
Well, the official Mojang blog announced a release today for the upcoming live action Minecraft movie. Too bad they have really stretched the meaning of the word upcoming. Minecraft, the movie, is slated to come out May 24th, 2019. That's a long time from now. And I'm afraid I probably mispronounced Mojang. Is it Mojang or Mojang? Mojang, sorry, to all you people out there, including my children, who spend most of their day playing Minecraft. Mojang.
Will you be going to see this when it comes out?
Absolutely. Will you?
If my kids want to go see it, I'll have to go see it. It comes down. I don't think that I would see it on my own. I don't even for I don't play Minecraft. I have played Minecraft, but I don't play Minecraft. But even for most, you know, video games that I play, rarely do they make a really good movie rendition. Resident Evil being one of the few that are, it's a pretty good film as well. But rarely do I find it's going to be a great movie.
Yeah.
I worry that it's going to end up like Pixels or something.
Yes, Pixels was not good. But I would not go by myself. I would go with my children. But 2019, I don't know. They could maybe have grown out of Minecraft by then. That's a long time from now.
It is. And you wonder why is it taking them that long? It's kind of pixelated. It should be relatively easy. I don't know if they're building a whole bunch of boxes for the movie and then they have to wait. But hopefully it'll be out soon.
They're building it in Minecraft. That's what's taking so long, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, I think Warner Brothers bought the rights in 2014. So it's already been a while. But you'll just have to wait or make your own movie in Minecraft. Google CEO Sundar Pichai has been hacked by the same team who hacked Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg a few weeks ago. While Zuckerberg's vulnerability was using an easy password and not changing it after the LinkedIn hack, Pichai was hacked due to a weakness in the online forum site Quora. The hacking team Our Mine are the evil geniuses behind this hack, the hack of Spotify CEO Daniel Ek, at Amazon CTO Werner Vogels, and Magic Mike star Channing Tatum, which I thought was interesting that they bunched all of them together, these three tech CEOs and Channing Tatum. I don't know what is behind this. The team, they wrote to the Next Web and said, "We're just testing people's security. We never changed their passwords. We did it because there are other hackers. Now other hackers cannot hack them and change everything." And they're sort of selling their security service at the same time. And I'm not sure anyone would use their security service after this. What do you think?
Well, I think that it gets some notoriety. You know who they are. And the best way to show that you really know what the vulnerability is to show the vulnerability, and what would be a better, more high profile way to do that. And so I think that a lot of really strong hackers are the ones that are hired by security teams because they know that they can do that. And so I think that it was great publicity for them. It shows how vulnerable we are to being hacked, and hopefully that we can make something that's more secure. But again, the more secure you make it, there's always someone that's going to be able to crack that.
Well, do you think it really does show how vulnerable we all are? Or is it really just the people like Sundar Pichai or Mark Zuckerberg or Channing Tatum, who are vulnerable because people want, I mean, nobody really wants my stuff. I probably should not say that, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like, this is like, it goes along with the story Leo and I talked about earlier, where Andy Greenberg and Wired said, stop using SMS for two-factor. And it's like, really, if you really are at risk, like, you know, if you're a whistleblower or something, you can. But for most of us, a lot of this stuff is tinfoil hat if you're saying, like, don't use SMS for two-factor. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that everyone's a little bit vulnerable. If you ever have had your identity stolen or a credit card stolen, or you do online banking, you want to make sure that the information that you put that is kept there. You never know when you could, have someone go into your bank account and mess things around. So the more that we spend time on the internet, the more that our lives are on the internet. I think that it's important, even if you are not high profile, to make sure that someone that may choose to want to do nefarious things with the things that you have online could use that. And I think that credit cards get hacked quite a good deal. And so you want to make sure that you're really secure with your passwords, and the websites that were there, they are vulnerable, and they should spend more time actually making sure that we're safe if they wish for us to do business there.
Yeah. And they said that they notified Quora about this vulnerability, and Quora didn't respond to them, didn't change it. So if that's true, then that makes sense. But, you know, I do prefer when hackers go to the company first and point it out so that it can be fixed before it becomes, you know, public.
Yeah, I think, again, they did this to increase their profile so that then they could, you know, make money on security or non-security, whichever way that might be, and to get the word out about themselves. And that's probably what they did very effectively, because everyone's talking about it.
Yes, including us.
Yes.
Snapchat launched a magazine today called Real Life. It's not on Snapchat, but on the good old-fashioned internet, like a blog. Today's long-form fare includes stories about how Clash of Clans is a waste of time, a story that refers to emoji and GIFs as new animative expressive forms, and a treatise on beauty scoring apps. I don't know what is going on here. Now, Georgia, are you a Snapchat user? Are you on Snapchat?
I'm not, though. I've downloaded it, but I've downloaded it only because of some of the different faces that you can have on it, and I really want them. I don't really want to chat with anyone on it. I just want to put my face and then bedazzle it in some sort of a way. So I'm probably not the right use case for Snapchat, but I really like them. And every time one of our co-hosts on the iMore show, Micah, sends me another cool filter that he has, I want to use that. So I've downloaded it, but I haven't set it up yet.
I use it to communicate with my daughter sometimes, but yeah, mostly I like using all the filters and the stickers and all the things, and then just saving it and posting it on some other old-fashioned media. which I know isn't probably their intention. But okay, so this magazine is something completely different. I'm very confused about it. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. The editor is Nathan Jurgensen. He's a Snapchat researcher, and he uses a lot of fancy terms like digital dualism. These pieces are really long, longer than anything I know that anyone would read on the internet, any average person mm-hmm. would read on the internet, not let alone the people that normally use Snapchat who are good.
You are absolutely right. When I went to the website and I read the emoji article and I went, whoa, the language and terms are not for the average person who cares about Snapchat. This is because this seems to be like postgraduate language that they're using in the article. And this is an article about emoji, which are, you know, effortless to see, universal, fun. And the article itself is, you know, quite verbose. And I would say, again, it's like the postgraduate audience in an article it's for Snapchat, which is mostly like teens to young adults, hip, quick, easy, and fast. And it seems like the entire website is very straightforward, very plain, very clean looking, but relatively sterile and the opposite of what Snapchat is. And so it made me very confused as to what are they hoping for and who is their target audience.
This is why I love talking to you, because I hadn't even thought about that. You're right. Emoji really is a universal language. It's there to include other people, where a lot of this language in here is the kind of language that's designed to exclude people who don't want to talk about the difference between the male gaze and the female gaze or other stuff that you got annoyed with when, you know, postgraduates, you had to talk to them in a coffee shop for some reason. Just it's so bizarre. And especially it seems not the same audience as Snapchat, but there was a piece that I mentioned about beauty scoring apps, and I tried to read it. It's very interesting. It's about a woman that when she used to go to ShopRite and play with some old-fashioned thing that was like a precursor to the beauty apps, and she talks about, you know, how you could digitally rate someone's beauty from the most beautiful person to the least beautiful person in the world, and that got me thinking about something that has been bugging me a little bit as a user of Snapchat with a teenage daughter, that a lot of these filters, while cute and funny, are sort of designed to cover up parts of your face. So there's like the dog ears and the dog nose that people use sometimes, and there's things that add makeup. It's all this stuff that I think people are using on a regular basis, and they want, and it's not that different than the face tuning apps, you know, the ones where it's like, here, take your selfie, but make yourself look beautiful, where just the idea of like what's beautiful and who decides that is really something that I think is, I don't know. I don't have the postgraduate language to describe it, but you know what I mean? You're yes. a psychotherapist. Run with
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what often happens. Like we now have filters that will make us prettier, make us look different, or hide our flaws. And I think that we really, our culture has pushed us into becoming like an archetype. Now with Photoshop, no one really looks like what they look like in real life anymore. And you can get away with covering up things. I remember when I first started on Twitter that I would actually like eliminate little flaws from my face for a little while because I was like, ooh, that picture does not look that great. Let's fix it. And I said, you know what? It's disingenuous, and you are whoever you are. And most of the things that are most important to us are on the inside. And often with these instant gratification applications, we just want people to accept us. And unfortunately, we are relatively superficial by nature, and we do judge people by, you know, aesthetics instead of what's on the inside. And I think that we're teaching people the wrong lessons in our culture, and we need to kind of go backwards. And it's about what you write and what you do, instead of the opposite to that, is what you portray on the outside. If you win the genetic lottery, that's fabulous and good for you. But really what's important to each person is what is their character and what they bring out to that. And that's what you should work on developing. But unfortunately, our technology is teaching us the difference between that and the opposite.
Well, after the break, Ashley Skeda is here to talk about PlayStation games that you haven't heard of yet. But first, let's take a minute to thank ZipRecruiter, the sponsor of this episode. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And with ZipRecruiter, now you can. Posting jobs in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. Don't leave it up to chance. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100 job boards, including social media networks like Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, all with a single click. Just post once and watch your candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. ZipRecruiter offers optimized pages that look great on any screen. Add their unique mobile apply process for more visitors and applicants. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can add multiple users to your account. Quickly screen candidates with real-world questions using free-form multiple choice or yes-no formats. View candidate responses in conjunction with their beautifully formatted resumes, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 800,000 businesses. That's more than 100 million candidate applications that have been delivered. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. So we spend a lot of time talking about Oculus and the HTC 5. But what about PlayStation VR? Joining us to talk about some of what we can expect from the October launch is Ashley Escada, senior editor at CNET TV and host of Tomorrow Daily. Welcome, Ashley.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I know that you know Georgia. You guys work together at iMore. And so I'm so glad to have you both here.
We caused a lot of trouble together. So I don't know if you should have us together on the same show. It might be dangerous.
You may have to separate us at some point.
Okay. Well, there is that division between you two on the TV right there. That just stay on your side. Don't cross that.
No, stop touching me.
So Ashley, you were first at E3, then you're at VidCon. E3 probably seems like a million years ago. I know you've been pretty busy. But what can you tell us about what was announced at E3 in regards to PlayStation VR?
Well, PlayStation VR really just had, well, an official launch date, which is great. And then the pricing still $399. And then we got to see a ton of launch window games. And so that was the most exciting thing for me because I am building a new PC. I'm in the process of that, but I don't have any VR headsets for PC yet. So this will sort of be, this is the one that I know I'm getting. I've pre-ordered it. I'm ready. And I was a little concerned about what was going to come out and was it going to be good compared to everything that we've seen with Oculus and Vive. And so I was, I'm proud and very pleasantly surprised to say that things look good for PlayStation VR. And I was very impressed with what I saw. We still see a lot of sort of experiences. The Batman Arkham experience was very kind of short, but also really cool. Like you were able to take the cowl and put it on, physically pick up the cowl and put it on your face and then look in the mirror. It was really neat. There were a lot of good horror games, which I'm sure we're going to see a lot of Let's Plays from with YouTubers and Twitch streamers. And I'm sure everybody will love that because people love to see other people get scared on the internet. And then, it's overall, like I think the launch window stuff, which is really fascinating. And I'm pleasantly surprised and actually anticipating PlayStation VR now as opposed to sort of being a little bit kind of not hedging my bets, but definitely a little nervous about, you know, what is it going to be, high quality? Is it not? But I do think there's some hurdles that PlayStation needs to sort of get over before it really kind of takes off in the way that I'm imagining they hope it does.
Well, Georgia, you have the Vive and the Oculus. Is this something that you're also planning to get?
We might get it, I think, and Ashley, you can tell us, but I think that in comparison, it's going to be a lower quality play experience because you end up having the motion controllers, but you're still, is it still a seated experience or standing experience versus something that you can interact with the room, Ashley?
It's not like Vive where you're walking around the room. It's a little bit more like Oculus where it's a lot of the games are intended to be seated, but there are games you're able to play standing. So they had the one with the aim controller and it was very weird though, because you're standing and you're kind of, you know, holding the aim controller and you're shooting these spiders, which I have to say the lag on that was really impressive. There's little to no delay in the response time, which is super important with VR. You want to make sure that all of that stuff is kind of lined up properly. But But as it was happening, as I was moving forward, because I was standing, I really wanted to be running, which I guess is why, the Virtuix Omni is a thing and why people really want it. And now I get it. I'm like, ooh, I can see where people would want that. But yeah, it's definitely a seated experience. I mean, console play is just, it's designed for you to be played on your couch. And so I think there's a lot of kind of questions about how to design games that are engaging and exciting in virtual reality while still sort of keeping you seated. And I think that's, and also keeping you from getting sick, which was one of the things that sort of happened this year with Resident Evil. The Resident Evil 7 demo, I guess, gave them a lot of motion sickness. I believe it's because it was running in 30 frames per second, if I'm not mistaken, Oculus and Vive are both 90, right? I think that's like the threshold that they're kind of requiring for developers. So yeah, I think they have to bring up that FPS significantly. And also, one of the things we kind of don't consider is that, so when PlayStation first came on the scene, we got really used to, or we had to get used to, moving the camera around with the right thumbstick. It was something we never had to do before. And it was exciting, but it was also very awkward. And so now in VR, you're kind of having to unlearn that. And after, so many console generations, it's hard to do. And so in Resident Evil 7 Biohazard, so you're wearing the virtual reality headset. Let's say I'm looking down at a piece of paper, and one of the sort of experimental formats for controls, moving, turning, is to sort of tap the right thumbstick right or left, and then you sort of move 40 degrees right or left in a circle. And Resident Evil 7 does not do that yet. It's just free movement in terms of turning your character. So if I'm looking at something at a table with my virtual reality headset on, my PSVR on, and I back up with the left thumbstick, and then by default or just because I have been conditioned to do so, I want to strafe and I hit the right thumbstick to move sideways, my head is still looking in this direction, but my whole body in the game swings this way. And it just did not make people feel great. So they have to keep people from, it's so important. They have to make it right. They have to keep people from getting sick, especially in that launch window. They have to.
Yeah, I've had my kids were playing with the Vive for a few weeks, and then they started playing with the Oculus here at work, and they immediately got sick. And it's funny because like they are 11-year-old boys, so they will keep doing it and probably until they throw up. Like you say that you have to, but and I'm not sure it's recommended for 11-year-old boys. So maybe that's why, because you would just do it until you got sick. But yeah, I totally agree with you. Now, and what about the horror? You talk about the game Here They Lie, which is good for fans of Lovecraft. How scary is it compared to just playing a regular video game, horror in VR?
So I'm very affected by sound. And so to have a surround sound headset can be very visceral. But I think with virtual reality, you're adding a whole other element of immersion into gaming. And so horror games really kind of take on a whole new life in virtual reality. So Here They Lie was extremely surreal. It wasn't a realistic horror game. I mean, there's a burning man with a suitcase that's 12 feet tall that climbs out of a portrait and walks after you, and starts burning things down. There's men with rat heads that jump out and attack you and things like that. And so it's certainly not a mired in realism horror game. I mean, you could even say a post-apocalyptic zombie game would mostly feel real with the exception of zombies. And that's not the case with a game like Here They Lie, but it still feels so much more foreboding. I mean, you just get a sense of that kind of darkness and this kind of environment that just really, you take off the headset and you're just like, wow, okay. I had a moment where I was playing Here They Lie and I snuck in, and this is so terrible. So when I was a kid, my mom used to hide behind doors and jump out and scare us. And she thought it was the funniest thing. And which is why I attack people now who jump out at me. So she jumps out and like scares us. So of course, in virtual reality, the first thing you want to do, you have the headset on, is you want to look around corners. You want to look. And so of course, I walked in a doorway and I'm like, I don't trust this. I look around the corner and there's a guy. And everybody at Tangentleman, the developer, was like, oh, you found him. Like, that's such a bummer. You didn't get surprised. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm good now. Thank you. Like, I'm just going to walk through the door to continue. And so I went through there and I knew what was going to happen. But even then, because virtual reality is so much more immersive, I still screamed a little bit, like at this very public facing demo experience in front of a bunch of people when that rat man attacked me. And it was bizarre. So I loved it, but it was also, I can't remember who it was, but somebody online was mentioning, what does this mean for games like Fallout, where it's incredibly realistic and where, you know, you're having to physically lift your arm to shoot somebody, a person, as opposed to, you know, a zombie or a monster, an alien or whatever. What does that mean for us as a society? Will it change us psychologically? Like, I don't know. I don't know the answers to these questions. I mean, I don't believe in the whole like direct correlation of like violence in video games causes people to be violent. For me personally, I don't think that that's true. I've played many violent games and I seem okay, I guess. Maybe I'm a little weird, but I don't think that's the violent games.
It could be your mom behind the...
Yeah, it's probably my mom. Like, I've got to blame my mom. But at the end of the day, it's sort of one of those things where it's really immersive and we have to think about, you know, how we design game. I think we have to think about as designers, if you're designing a game, like, okay, I need to think about what this means for a person when they actually complete these actions. It's so different. It's so different. And in a way, it's amazing. I mean, it's what we've always wanted in virtual reality. It's such an interesting thing to sort of have all these concepts and ideas that we had back in the 90s when virtual reality sort of had a fad period where it was terrible and you had to go pay $20 to play 5 minutes at a county fair. But we're finally getting to a point now where it's like, this is what I always thought of when I thought of virtual reality. And this is what I read about in books like Snow Crash. And so we have to think about what that will do to us as a society, I guess. It's an interesting sort of thing. I mean, it may not change us at all. Like, who knows? But if augmented reality and virtual reality is going to be as big as I think it is, I look forward to seeing how people sort of respond and react to being in it. And some people will have the same problems as MMOs. They'll get addicted to virtual reality or they'll get addicted to augmented reality, like whatever that is. It's really fascinating to think about. And I don't know, like I said, I don't know what the answer is, but I do think it's really interesting.
Well, Georgia, what do you think? I mean, do you think there's any truth to, I mean, do you think there's any way our brains are being affected by VR in a different way? Anything being rewired by this immersive experience?
Well, for the good and for the bad, yes, it does work. One of the first Call of Duty games was used by the military in order to help the kill ratio of soldiers. And it did. It works to become more effective. We can depersonalize more if we've done things. On that same effect, we've already been using, and long ago we've been using, virtual reality systems in order to help people dealing with traumas or fears or phobias. And mm-hmm. there's systems out there to help people do that. And it's kind of like the in-between, like, you know, when I'm helping someone with a fear or phobia of, say, spiders, we start off by pictures of spiders, GIFs of spiders, videos of spiders from cartoon, then to more realistic. Virtual reality would work perfectly in between that and when I actually grab a poor spider and bring it to work with me to interact with a real spider. And we really rely strongly on our visual field. And so because of that, they're already thinking of dealing with social anxiety through virtual reality. And mm-hmm. it is effective. So it can be used for the good and it can be used from the bad. But I think that Ashley brings up a really good point, because it can also cause some post-traumatic stress. If you're doing something, we already feel that the characters that are online are real and we care about them to a certain extent. And so seeing graphic violence in that setting, whereas we see it as more realistic than not, can cause trauma to people. And so we want to make sure that you're aware of what you're getting into and you're aware of what age the person is that this is being targeted to.
Yeah, I think, Georgia, that's like a really good point. It's very similar to sort of buying a Grand Theft Auto game for your kid. I think like people should know their kid or their, you know, what they should know themselves or know their kid well enough to sort of understand like, hey, is this appropriate? Can they handle this? Can I have a conversation about this? And other than that, like, I mean, it feels like that is, it kind of falls in the same wheelhouse, I would guess.
Yeah, Yeah, it does, except this one is even more realistic. And so because of that, and like I'm the same thing with you as with the sound and with the creepiness of playing a game like Brookhaven, I am scared to death in this game. And I have to keep on reminding myself, you know, this isn't real. There aren't really zombies there. But often I'm playing a game on the Vive and I, you know, lean on the floor and I fall over the floor and I'm scared to death because what the lean to that I thought I was leaning against is not there. Or if I'm on the ledge of something, I'm actually feeling the same experience as if I was really on a ledge. I'm walking over sure. bricks that are on the floor. I don't want to get too close to it. And so because of that, yeah, I think that it can have a little bit more of a lasting effect on people that use it. And we'll only know within, you know, 5-10 years to see what that effect really will be.
Yes. Ashley, thank you so much for joining us and for telling us about the PlayStation VR and what we have to expect. Tell us a little bit about what you cover on Tomorrow Daily.
So Tomorrow Daily, we love to have a lot of fun. It's me and Jeff Cannata, if you are familiar with him from such podcasts as We Have Concerns and DLC. We talk about future technology and a little bit of geek pop culture, a little bit of video games. And we have some short shows during the week, and then we sort of bring it all together again on Thursdays with a really long show. This week's guest is Anthony Carboni, and I think we may actually talk about E3 because I was at VidCon last week. But yeah, it's really fun, and I mean, I get to talk about robots and outer space all day, so it's a pretty good gig, and I really enjoy it, and I highly encourage anybody who might be interested in it to go check it out. We have two different types of shows, a short show that's about 5 minutes and a long show once a week that's an hour. So depending on your schedule, you can watch one or the other or both. Like it's great. And you can just go to tomorrowdaily.com. It'll take you right to the page on CNET.
Well, Ashley, thank you so much for coming on the show. Hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Bye, guys.
Take care.
Bye, Ashley.
So here's some feedback we got. Last week we talked about self-driving cars and the trolley problem and how we wondered how programmers would code ethics into cars to decide which way the robot car would swerve if it had to choose who to hit and who to save. We got lots of mail about this. Roger writes, the likelihood of being in a no-win situation is truly less with a self-driving car. Most accidents occur because you don't see something or you've miscalculated your ability to avoid something. A self-driving car will never be distracted. It can see everything around the car and it will always be evaluating situations and driving at the right speed for conditions. Think of self-driving cars as the ultimate secret agent or MacGyver. It has sensors, physics, and math at its disposal. It can use temperature, speed, stopping distance, turning radius, etc. to find a way to defuse the no-win situation. And if for some reason a no-win situation arises, and it will, I take comfort in knowing that scientists, lawyers, ethicists, and bureaucrats will have weighed in on the best alternative. Georgia, do you take comfort in the fact that bureaucrats will have weighed in on the best alternative in programming the self-driving car?
I don't know about bureaucrats. I do think that companies don't want to be sued. And so because of that, for their own self-interest, they're going to try to make these cars as safe as possible. And I think that in most cases, the cars are going to be safer than us that are using our makeup or tweeting in the middle of driving at the same time or with screaming kids or listening to really loud music. So I think that self-driving cars are going to have it be a safer environment for us. I think there's always going to be ethical implications to that. But I think by and large, something that's always on versus us who we are often off while we drive or kind of in just limbic mode. We're not really thinking about driving while we're going. I think it's going to be safer and better and probably also faster.
No, I mean, when you think about it, just the idea that removing all drunk drivers from the road, just that, not the makeup or the tweeting or the texting, just removing all drunk drivers from the road is an amazing prospect. So yeah, I think it's going to be some big moral questions ahead, but definitely will be safer. So after the break, we're going to pick George's brain some more about life hacks, breathing, and some more VR. But first, let's take a minute to thank Zerto, the sponsor of this episode. Zerto is IT asset protection, disaster recovery, and cloud continuity for confidence CIOs. Confidence can make or break businesses in today's IT world. It can mean the difference between hesitation and action, success, or irrelevance. Zerto's cloud-based business continuity solutions give today's CIOs and IT pros the confidence to know their systems are ready for anything. With Zerto, you can recover from downtime, test new technology, and move to the cloud in just a matter of clicks. all while maintaining business continuity. Certo's virtual replication technology gives you the power to simplify your migrations, switch to new infrastructure faster, and get quicker ROI in a matter of clicks. Migrate to the cloud with no disruptions, with enterprise-class software that empowers you to seamlessly and safely move virtualized workloads between public, private, and hybrid clouds. Get complete comprehensive data protection in one smart solution for BCDR across storage and hypervisors. Recover from any disruption with checkpoints every few seconds. Protect and recover files, VMs, and applications from any point in time. See for yourself how Certo simplifies your data replication and disaster recovery. Plus, get a free readiness assessment for your data center at confidencecio.com. That's confidencecio.com, and we thank Certo for their support. A few weeks ago, Apple announced all the new features of watchOS 3, and one was an addition to the health app that would remind you to breathe. Georgia, since you're an expert in Apple Watches and breathing, I'm interested in your thoughts on this.
Well, I'm really excited about this because as an anxiety specialist at work, one of the first things that we teach people and one of the most effective techniques to work on getting your anxiety down is by learning proper breathing techniques. And it's funny because most people kind of scoff at that and they say, well, I've been breathing all my life. But and hopefully they have. But with this breathing app, what you get to do is you teach yourself proper breathing techniques of being calm and relaxed. And so the opposite of being calm, like when you're in an anxious state, your breathing is short and it's kind of short chest breaths, which is the breathing that you would have to do if you're running away from a predator. And so this technique that the Apple Watch is giving you is the first thing that I teach people. It's a deep, slow, relaxed breathing technique. And it works really, really effectively, as effective as exercise, slightly less effective than medication in moderating your levels of anxiety. But the biggest problem that people have whenever I tell them is that they forget. It's not that they don't want to, because you only need like 30 seconds to a minute of training, you know, really six times a day, if possible, to be able to get really good at practicing being relaxed. And the more that you practice being relaxed, the more that you are relaxed, because how do you get better at something if not practicing? And so this application will let you know every 4 hours, listen, take a moment and breathe. And it goes through the steps on how to do a proper relaxed breathing exercise as well, which is the same type of breathing that you do when you're sleeping. So it's not really unintuitive to you, but when you're nervous, you're doing the opposite thing. And so this ends up sending a secondary message, which ends up turning on your parasympathetic nervous system, which is the system that says, oh, I guess everything's okay. We don't have to send adrenaline into your system, which is so effective in keeping yourself calm. So it would turn on, you practice it, and you'll get better at it. And the wonderful part is that being reminded to do it, it goes through the steps with you by giving you, if you want, visuals, or if not, it gives you tactic feedback on teaching you how to breathe properly, which will make you better at it and give you a better benefit to that as well. So though many people have said, oh, that's kind of hokey and Apple's just trying to get into the health kick, no, this is scientifically proven. This is something that will save you a lot of money, a lot of anxiety, and the better that you get it, the longer and stronger your health benefits will be at the same time.
So if someone doesn't have an Apple Watch, is there anything that you recommend they could do with their iPhone or with their Android phone?
There's a lot of different breathe applications that you can do. And really the biggest tip or trick would be that you breathe in for, say, 4 seconds. And if you can through your nose, that's a natural regulator so you don't suck in air too quickly. And then you want to breathe out. You pause for a moment and then you breathe out for longer. And so you just make sure that you slowly breathe out and if possible out of your mouth for longer than you breathed in. And there's a lot of different applications that are out there that would send you a reminder and then you'd be able to go through them. I think that one of them is called Ooh, Breathe Something. I forget what it's called. But these applications work really well to set you a reminder to that. The nice thing with the watch is that it's always on you. And so it can help you be reminded to do it without having to worry. But there's applications, there's websites that you can go to do that, but they're a little bit more work and it's a little bit more difficult if your phone is not with you at the time.
Well, checking your Twitter, I noticed you have a great hack for those of us who are too cheap to buy a dashboard mount for our iPhones. Tell us how we can get around buying one of those and still have our iPhone set up.
Right. Well, So I don't have any way of attaching my phone to my car. The 6 Plus is too large for what I used to have. And so the hack that I found was just using an elastic band, and you tie it through one of the grills on your car so that it holds your phone in place. Now, I've tried it out. My elastic wasn't that strong, so unfortunately, my phone started to slip, which caused me mild amounts of anxiety because I didn't want my phone to fall down as it was getting bumpy. So use a stronger elastic than what I did. And then the second worry is that this elastic is going to like get sucked in and then end up in my car engine. But those two aside, this works out pretty cheaply and you don't have to spend $40 or worry about it fitting or dealing with it. And it's quite effective. You do end up with a little tiny band that you can't see through. But it's pretty useful besides that. So it's the cheap, easy way, elastic band, attach it to one of the air ducts, and you are good to go.
Well, presumably you shouldn't be looking at a line of text that small anyway, right?
Like, that is true.
Anything that's behind a rubber band, if you're in the car, you shouldn't be reading it, right?
I would never do that.
It should be for just like the radio.
It's always the maps that I need. Like, I listen to where the maps go, but because of my dyslexia, I, like, sometimes get the left and the right parts kind of mixed up. And so it's nice just to make sure that I'm on track, being able to see that visually while I'm driving so that I don't end up, you know, going over a bridge to nowhere, which we have many of while I'm trying to get home.
Bleak in the chat room also says you can use a piece of Velcro and stick it in your on your windshield, I guess, or your dashboard, and then any other piece of Velcro, and then stick it there. But then you have to have Velcro on your phone.
That would be the problem, is that I'd have Velcro at the back of my phone, and I guess it would be like the soft part of the Velcro. Yeah, maybe it might work out. I might try that out as well. I like that.
Thank you, Bleak. And thank you, Georgia. Now let's talk a little bit more about VR and nausea, because I know that you have some experience with this. You have the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive. You've devoted a room to the Vive. How do you think the two compare?
So there's a few differences to them. By and large, I enjoy the Oculus experience much more than Oculus experience much more when it's in a stationary visual field. So all I'm doing is like watching a movie. I like Oculus a little bit better. I find that it's the screen and the lenses are a little bit better, and it seems less pixelized. It's clearer, not just in the focal area where I'm staring at, but in the periphery. And so if I'm doing just a regular movie that I'm watching, I will do that in Oculus. Now, for gaming and experiential issues, the Vive is hands down better. One is that you get to interact in a space. And for me, the reason that I love VR experiences is because I can move around and pick stuff up and throw things at people. And I'm actually doing the movement. Plus, it's amazing exercise. If you're doing a game like Hollow Point, you are truly grabbing, notching an arrow and then throwing it around and then trying to duck or move out of the way. So it's forcing me to exercise at the same time, which is amazing. And so I find that Vive really holds down for the immersive experience. I think that even when Oculus gets their touch controllers, I think that still Vive is going to win out because it's a full room and it's 360 versus Oculus, which is still going to be a seated or standing experience. And you're really going to have a 180 field of view from the camera that's there. And the Vive has the sensors, which allows, reason why I got rid of my couch, which allows a full room to be able to be utilized for whatever you're playing. And if you're playing a game like Battle Dome or a Hollow Point game when you're shooting things, it's really wonderful to be able to run around, move around. You feel like you're there. And so for immersion, I would say that the Vive wins out, though I love the lenses on the Oculus.
Well, Ashley was talking about the importance of VR not making people nauseous. You have some ideas you've been working on, and what is it that that is actually causing people this nausea?
In the end, it's from incongruent sensory inputs. So we rely really strongly on our visual field to tell us where we are and what we're doing. And we have a part in our vestibular system in our inner ear, which is the semicircular ducts. And those are what we do for balance. And what it really is there's like three little loops on each side of our ears with liquid inside of them. And then there's hairs that tell where, if we're leaning our head to the side or to the other side, forward or backwards. And so what happens that in a game, and there's many different reasons that can cause motion sickness, and there's different types of motion sickness, but in the end, almost all of them are from a difference in what we see visually to what our body feels. And so if there's data coming to us visually that says that we're falling over to the side, yet to our head we're not, or vice versa. Our body interprets that as there must be something really wrong. And it's interesting because if we suddenly don't feel like we're falling down, but the floor tells us we are, or even turning, it's usually things that are on the x-axis. So it's not up and down, but it's things that are moving sideways. So on Eve Valkyrie, it was when I did a full spin sideways, a wing-to-wing span that made me feel really ill. And the coolest part is that our body's pretty cool. The reason that this happens is that there would be only two basic main reasons why that we would get incongruent data from visually what we see and to our inner ears. And one would be sickness, and the other one would be poisoning. And for both of those things, getting nausea and throwing up would be very beneficial to us. And so that's why you end up getting this nausea when our body is getting two very different sensory inputs to say, you know what, there must be something really wrong. Let's throw up whatever is making us feel this sick so that we will be better and will increase our survival.
Mm-hmm. And so now I've heard that it's worse for women. Is that true? Nausea?
Yes. Yes, it is, which is really strange. We're not really sure why. One of the main theories is that because women were, it was so important for us to keep well, and then we were very prone to mild distortions so that we would bring up any sickness or illness because we would have to carry children. And it was beneficial to the species if women were more sensitive to making sure that we would throw up a poison or a food that we ate that was not good for us or an illness to that. And so some people say it's a hormonal change also, which creates that with us. But I think that it's for the survival of us as a species, that we're a little bit more sensitive to visual cues. Interestingly enough, though, my husband gets motion sickness much worse than I ever do to anything. But I guess I'm one of the rare cases to that.
So we just need to evolve faster. That's the...
We need to. Other things would be frames per second, latency. So that would be also when, you know, when you're moving through and there's a flicker. So you move your head and then the frames per se, the picture actually moves afterwards. Again, we're seeing something and doing something and we're getting a distortion to that. And that's also one of the main issues that would cause us to feel ill with that. And the last one's kind of interesting. That's motion parallax, which is a very cool phenomenon, which is objects in the distance appear to move slower to us than objects that are closer. And so what could happen is that if you see something and they're not having that very important motion parallax of things moving further in the distance, slower, we can feel also this, that there's something really not right and we can feel a little bit ill.
So when you're finished with this, it's going to be on iMore. Should people check Twitter to read this so that they have a link to send to someone who's worried about this?
Yeah, I'll probably be writing up something for VR Heads, our virtual site, about this. And we'll also be going through something on the breathing application, which you can check out on iMore. And of course, there was also the field of view that you discussed, I think it was last week on the show, which is the amount of degrees that you see, which is, I think, at 140 degrees of field of view, most people feel sick. And if you shorten that, we can deal with distance better. And so that's another thing that is one of the other reasons why VR and motion sickness kind of go together.
Well, I am a big fan of VR Heads and everything that Russell is doing over there. So, yeah, to check that out now. He has some great pieces on really every piece of VR. And it really ranges from basic stuff to more advanced stuff, people that have been using this stuff. So, yeah, check out VR Heads and follow Georgia on Twitter so you can see when this piece comes out. And now we have TNT's fan of the day, who is Dana Schwartz, who seems to be quite the multitasker, sitting in the timpani section. Dana says this was the next to final rehearsal with all the attendees and the Baltimore Symphony on stage at the Meyerhoff Symphony Hall watching TNT. The concert was Saturday night, and Dana says it was fantastic. So hopefully he was also paying attention while watching Tech News Today. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT, and we are going to find it. After the break, our children are growing up in a world of robots. You might as well encourage them to get used to it now. Let's take a minute first to thank Atlassian, the sponsor of this episode. What if I told you that there was a way to eliminate meetings, or at least make them shorter and less excruciating? You can unleash your team's potential with collaborative software tools like HipChat and Jira, which will enable you to work better and communicate better together. Today, nearly anything is possible, and if we can dream it, teams can build it. So how do you bring everything together to create what's next? Team up with Atlassian, the makers of collaboration software that lets teams work together and communicate better together. Jira lets you assign, track, and manage tasks for any project, no matter how complex. Confluence helps you create and share content, organize results, and bring team members up to speed. And with HipChat, your team can instant message or video chat from really any device they have. Bitbucket is a powerful way to review and manage code in real time. Now, we love all of the Atlassian programs. Our engineering team uses Confluence to document equipment and work processes, and Jira for managing vendors and organizing tasks. For everything from planning events to working on serious operational issues, we tie our communications together with HipChat. Visit Atlassian.com and see how Jira, Confluence, HipChat, Bitbucket give your team everything you need to organize, discuss, and complete shared work. Atlassian, helping teams everywhere team up to create what's next. That's Atlassian.com. So how much would you pay to give your child a robot designed by Carnegie Mellon PhDs? What if it utilized some of the most sophisticated artificial intelligence software on the consumer market today? For $160, you can pre-order the Cosmo robot made by the folks at Enki, who are also behind the Overdrive cars that connect with an app. And what do you make of the set of machine learning algorithms that Enki calls the emotional engine for this tiny little robot, Georgia?
I think it's amazing. There's something that like scares me and excites me about robots and machine learning. But I think that it's the way of the future. I think that the better robots, they can help us. But again, it's also a little bit creepy and scary at the same time. Does it excite you?
It does. Now, have your kids ever played with the Enki Drive or Enki Overdrive cars?
No, I've played with it at CES myself. But I think it takes up a lot of space, and now we have the VR room. So I think that we're going to have to wait a little bit until the cars get better. Well, and then we need to dedicate another room for it.
Yeah, we need to dedicate a room. My kids have them. They got them for Christmas from their grandparents, and they love them. But yeah, it takes up a lot of room. And so it's these cars that they connect to your iPhone or your smartphone, and then you control them with that, and they kind of know where to drive. And the first time our dog walked across them and scratched them, they were kind of ruined. So that's unfortunate.
Oh, no.
It works based on these tracks, and they're not tracks, they're just flat, but, you know, it scratched something in it. That was unfortunate. So I got really excited about this robot. I think it's cute. It plays with you. It has a personality. It was developed by a Pixar designer. So, yeah, and $160 is, you know, in rate. It's not the cost of a hoverboard that I didn't buy them for Christmas last year and they still resent me for. So
I've always wanted to have my own little tiny robot. Like forever. And so this really intrigues me, but I think I'm going to wait to see how much you can get out of it. It's a great price. $160, you really can't go wrong with that for your own little tiny robot friend.
You can't.
I just
really
need it to be able to make me coffee.
Yeah. Did you see the robot dog from Boston Dynamics that would put dishes in the dishwasher that came out last week?
Yeah. All of those robots from Boston Dynamics are really frightening. So. When we see them getting kicked over and then they adjust and they're still standing, all I think about whenever I see Boston Dynamics is, you know, what do I need in order to defeat these robots if coming up robot apocalypse shows up? And I'm thinking an AT-AT machine, you know, like you get the grappling hook and you swing it around the robot's legs. I think that might help out. Or lots of stairs or big magnets. Invest in magnets.
Well, I think this new Boston Dynamics robot was designed specifically to seem sweet, like a dog, like a family pet.
If they were like, you know, wanting to take over, wouldn't that be exactly what you would design it to look like?
Mm-hmm. Yes, right down to the video of it slipping on a banana peel, because, you know, you're supposed to say, look, it slips on a banana peel, ha, 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 right before it, you know, takes out your brain with its big claw.
Yes. Plus, it's like really hard to invest in that many banana peels. Like, unless you're playing Mario Kart, you don't usually have banana peels on hand.
That is why I like speaking to you, because that is a point I did not think of. And I'm so glad that you did. Georgia, thank you so much again for joining us. Is there anything else that you've been working on that we should know about?
We're going to be getting 3 new videos out, one on depression, one on boundaries and consequences for anxiety videos. So we're going to be doing that in the next few weeks, and they should be on the website.
And that's anxiety underscore videos?
Dash, anxiety-videos.com.
Excellent. And Georgia is at Georgia Dow on Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And take care. And tomorrow's guest will be Scott Johnson from the Frog Pants Network. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv, or you could leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. Someone left half a voicemail last week, but it got cut off. So please leave it again. It was about our Airbnb story. Call back because we only got half your voicemail. So call back 260-TNT-SHOW. I want to hear the rest of your voicemail. You can also hit us up on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV. Subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I am at Megan Maroney. Thanks to our technical director, Josh, who did a great job. And thanks to Greg Burnett for doing the words that I read. And thanks to everyone who helps us produce this show every single day. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We will see you tomorrow.